I'm Scott Ott, and I love me some income inequality. On today's podcast, the beauty, that's right, the beauty of income inequality. The Democrats think they're going to win the White House in 2016 by decrying the civil rights issue of our time, this crisis called income inequality. I'm going to tell you in the next 22 minutes or so why Republicans should be the champions of income inequality. One of the most exciting books I've read recently. This is a book that's called Popular Economics, and it has there's a colon in it, and then it was how the Rolling Stones and LeBron James and somebody else, I forget, there's several, Downton Abbey, what they can teach you about economics. It's not a very long book, but it is a terrific book. And the funny thing is, maybe this is just my personality. The funny thing is, John Tamney wrote this book using illustrations from popular culture, but I remember almost none of the illustrations for popular culture. What really stuck with me were some of the just really pithy ways that he expressed himself in talking about how economics works. And the thrust of the book was to say that taxation, regulation, monetary manipulation, and trade manipulation are all not only fruitless activities in many ways of government, but they can be very harmful. And that's not to say there should be no taxation or no regulation, but in general, the higher you get in taxation, regulation, trade, interference with trade, and monetary manipulation, the manipulating the value of the dollar, the more harmful it is. And the more liberty you have in all of those areas, the more likely you are to have the kind of prosperity that people say they want, and that people say they want for the poor. Anyway, at one point in the book, he says this really counter-narrative thing. He says, income inequality is truly beautiful. And I thought, what? You can't say that. Not in this day and age, when we have an entire political party that is running against income inequality. Actually, like a party and a half, because, you know, Bernie Sanders. So the Democrats and Bernie Sanders are both running against income inequality. President Obama, I believe, is called income inequality the civil rights challenge of our day or something like that. And here's this guy writing this economics book saying income inequality is truly beautiful. Now, I can't do it justice. You really need to download the sample chapter to your Kindle device. If you don't have a Kindle device, get Kindle on your smartphone or on your computer and download the sample chapter. Yeah, Buck, Tamney is right on. I believe I first heard about Tamney when I was watching Stu Brugere on the Blaze TV, and he was driving around in a car talking to the guy who wrote this book, and I thought, that sounds interesting. So I hope the same thing happens to you. I hope you say, oh, that sounds interesting. That book Scott's talking about, Popular Economics, go to Amazon.com right now. Come on, you're on your computer. You can do this. And download the sample chapter. To find out more about this, just read the sample chapter, and I think you'll want to read the rest of it. Well, why is income inequality beautiful? While one side of the political spectrum is striving to redistribute the income that's earned by these people who are at the high end of the sort of income inequality scale, the fact that there is income inequality is a beautiful thing because it motivates people to want to do things that improve everybody's lives. That includes creating innovative products and services that save people money, that improve their lives, that may even save their lives, that motivates them to do that. So the money that they're using in their own company and the motivation that they have to do that is the opportunity to become wealthy, and not only to become wealthy, they just want to do something great in many cases. So that is great. But even the profits that they don't invest back into the company, you know, people say, oh, they're sitting on billions of dollars. Well, what do you think they have? Do you think they're filling up coffee cans with gold and burying them in the backyard? No, that's not what's happening. The money that billionaires have is invested. And only by investing it can you free it up to make it available to people like maybe the boss at your company who needs to borrow some money because he wants to launch a new initiative, to buy a new piece of equipment, to open a new location, to expand the workforce. And so a small business who wants to buy a delivery van or be able to get some more supplies or whatever, you've got that The billionaire's money is going back out into the economy, is being redistributed in ways that create jobs, that create other useful services for the rest of it, that drive down prices for all of us. And so the people who we say, you know, the income inequality warriors out there who are saying, oh, this is terrible, there's such a gap between the rich and the poor. When you get right down to it, people don't care about the gap between the rich and the poor. They care about whether they have enough. Now, you know, he gives an example, or maybe this was my friend Wayne that gives an example and says, you know what? If you lived on an island and everybody on the island made $20,000 a year and one guy made $50,000 a year, would you like hate this guy? Would you think we should take away his extra $30,000 a year? No, as long as he earns that money doing something that is legitimate, that is legal, and that's of value to other people, you know, God bless him. If we didn't have income inequality, what motivation would there be for people to try to create these innovative products? You know, if you can't, in fact, even if, let's say somebody was just altruistically motivated to want to do some fantastic things, well, even if they don't take that profit money for themselves and go out and buy a Mercedes and a yacht, they could use it for research and development to make better products, to make better services. I am so grateful that Steve Jobs became a, you know, billionaire or whatever he became, because I'm right now talking to you on a piece of his hardware using a lot of his software. And the cost of computing over the course of Steve Jobs' career in software and hardware, the cost of computing has plummeted. The capabilities of computing have skyrocketed. Everybody practically has a computer of one sort or another in their home or their hand. When, you know, it wasn't too many years ago, I remember when nobody had a computer. That was insane. Who had a computer? When you told somebody they had a computer, you had a computer, they'd be, really? What do you do with that? It's like, is it like a typewriter? But all of this is made possible by the fact that income inequality exists, that people are motivated to try, that people are motivated to excel. And government cannot redistribute money as effectively as free market capitalism. There's just no way for government to do that, because in free market capitalism, the money flows downhill toward the customers. The money flows to where it's needed. In government taxation schemes, when the government is taxing people and then using that money to buy things, it's a handful of eggheads in Washington, D.C. who think they know where things should go, but they don't really know. Yeah, I wrote a column about this for PJ Media. Very few people read this column, which is why I'm plugging it in this show, because you really should read this column. It gives you some sense of what this book is about. And then go ahead and read the book as well. But the reality is that you already know more about economics than most economists. And it's just common sense stuff. There's a great example in the book about the Rolling Stones. And the Rolling Stones were living in England. And then the British government decided that they were going to jack taxes up. I think it was something like to 83%, but then for the very wealthy, for like the next, you know, the incremental earnings, it would be like 98%. So the Rolling Stones were being somewhat successful. They were becoming wealthy. And the British government, not to get at the Rolling Stones, but the British government raised taxes on the wealthy. Well, when they did that, they were, you know, somebody got to be thinking, hey, you know what? The Rolling Stones are in England and they're making millions. We're going to get 83% of their millions of dollars. Ain't that awesome? But Keith Richards and Mick Jagger didn't think that that was awesome. And instead of paying the 83%, they left. They left the country. They went to France. And I believe in France, it was that they recorded their album Exile on Main Street, which Keith Richards thinks is one of the best albums they ever did. And so we find that 83% of nothing is nothing. In other words, you can't get no blood from no stones. If the stones leave, you're not going to get any of their money. And that's what happened. Rich people will always be able to find ways to avoid paying confiscatory tax rates. And it's a good thing that they will. We shouldn't hate them for that. Because when the money goes into the, you know, the sucking vortex of the government, that's where it's going to be misallocated. Money will be misallocated in government because it is not possible for a handful of people in Washington, D.C. or wherever your state capital is to really know where is the best place to put the money. Millions of decisions are being made every day by people like you and me that determine where money flows. And so if there's a demand for a particular product, money flows in that direction, okay? If the demand falls off, money flows away from that. And that's how that works. If you had given the responsibility to some government agent to say, hey, you know what? Why don't you decide where we're going to put the money for the music business? Well, when I was a kid, we used to go to Tower Records or Sam Goody's and buy vinyl. Well, the irony is now you can, like, vinyl is for collectors and it's even more expensive than ever. But you could go to a record store. Well, you know what? After 36 years for one of them and 40-some years for the other one, Tower Records and Sam Goody Records both went out of business in 2006. Why? Because nobody was buying records anymore. People were buying, then went to DVDs, and then they went to things you can't even touch. Like the music that I listen to now, I pull up Spotify on my phone and I listen, like, in the morning sometimes when I'm reading, I'll listen to Christian music in the background. Or this morning, I think I was listening to, I forget what it was. It wasn't Rachmaninoff, Shostakovich. And so the business radically changed. Remember the video rental business. We used to go down to Blockbuster, you know, once or twice a week, and we would rent videos. Blockbuster was becoming the dominant force in the video rental business. They practically had a monopoly, and of course, governments hate monopolies, and so, you know, regulators will be all exercised about that, and they'll say, man, we should probably do something about this monopoly. Well, before they could do anything about it, everything changed in the movie business. First, Netflix got the idea of saying, you know what, you don't have to come into the store. We'll just send you the DVD. You just make a list of DVDs you want, and we'll send them to you. Keep them as long as you like. You're not going to have to pay a fee for keeping them too long. And then after that, all of a sudden, Netflix was saying, hey, we don't even have to mail you anything. We're just going to stream it to you over the ether. And somehow it lands in your computer. It's magical. I have no idea how this works. But the point is, everything changes. The whole, before government could possibly act to block a monopoly, everything changes. Some of you may remember back when everybody bought their phone service and their phone from one company. And the government wanted to break up that company. But it wasn't the breaking up of Ma Bell that changed everything. That didn't stop any sort of dangerous monopolization problems. What changed everything was some geniuses in some laboratory who figured out a way to rip your gigantic telephone off the wall, shrink it down, and stick it in your pocket, and then put the entire knowledge and entertainment of the world on it. The Democratic Party is hammering on this income inequality thing and saying, and in fact, there was an article in National Review today, I believe. I just caught a glimpse of it, and they were saying, oh, Hillary Clinton's probably going to be the next president because this whole income inequality thing is really going to resonate with people. Where are the Republicans making the case for the beauty of free markets? Where are the Republicans making the case for your choice? Where are the Republicans making the case for your opportunity, for that, you know, cruise that you want to go on, for the one of those cool shiny red side-by-side washer dryer pairs? Those are awesome. Where are the Republicans who are basically saying the reason why all of this stuff exists is because of income inequality? It is because of free markets. It is because of solid property rights and certain protections that we have in this country that are like nowhere else on earth. And the Republicans should be selling this. Because what kind of future do you want? Do you want a future where everybody has the same thing? Or do you want to have the freedom to pursue your dreams? Do you want to know that if you get a great idea, you can start a business and maybe become one of these guys who's trying to decide, you know, which tax accountant to hire because you've got so much money, and maybe scratching your head and going, hey, I wonder if I should move to France like the Rolling Stones did. No, 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 no. Don't go to France. They just jacked their taxes up really big. There's 75% tax over there. It's crazy. We should be the ambassadors of the truth and beauty of the free markets that have literally saved the world. I mean, poverty, $1.25 a day poverty is plummeting around the world, not because of UNICEF or the United Nations or you know, all of this not-for-profit organizations. Poverty is being killed off by free market capitalism. And it's a beautiful thing. There are people alive today who would have been dead if they had been born 50 years earlier. And they're alive today because of silly things like this. They're alive because they are able to get a job where they don't have to wade in up to their knees in muck and catch diseases and die at the age of 35 if they're lucky, if they make it through, you know, infancy. Capitalism is saving the world. Now, I don't mean in this, you know, ultimate sort of theological sense, but lives are being saved. The fact that there are some among us, maybe even in this audience, who have inside of their chest something that keeps their heart beating, those people would have been dead years ago. If it weren't for capitalism, if it weren't for the opportunity of free markets, if it weren't for the research and development that's fostered by the driving desire some people have of making their mark in the world and becoming successful and becoming wealthy in the course of doing this, these people would be dead. Your relatives would be sitting around thinking about you at Christmas time. We, and a lot of us who are watching this right now and participating in this program, know that it is free market capitalism that has saved our lives, that has made us comfortable in ways that were unimaginable, and it's doing the same thing for the rest of the world. You know what's happening? You know why people are talking about income inequality right now? It's kind of like, I was on a, years ago, I went to the Bermuda or the Bahamas or something like that. And I heard a guy, we were on this little boat that was going somewhere, and I heard a guy complaining about something on the buffet of the cruise ship that he was on. Like, I don't know, the shrimp wasn't cold enough or something like that. And I thought, you know, it is, we are victims of success. We are victims of our own prosperity. We have gotten so used to everything being awesome that we can't stand the thought that everything's not awesome all the time. And we feel guilty because everything's awesome for us now, but it's just starting to get awesome for people in other countries. Somehow we think that we can, even though we were helped by free market capitalism to get to this incredible standard of comfort, that those people in that other country somehow, some other system is needed for them. The system that's going to help them is if we just like give them stuff. That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works. That's the old lady in the commercial says. That is our disease. It's not only that we have first world problems and first world guilt, but we lose our minds. We just, it's like, we just came down a road that led us to here, and then somebody comes up to us or somebody calls us and said, hey, how do I get to where you are right now? And you say, oh, I'm not sure, but I don't want you to come up this road because that was difficult. Here, I'll tell you what, why don't you just like magically drop from the sky to where I am? Well, it doesn't work that way. It can't happen that way. And yes, it is better to give than to receive. That's a joy that you receive from people. But you know what's even better, in a sense? It's better to give an opportunity to somebody to preserve their own dignity by doing God-blessed labor and work of some sort so that they can not only receive an income and a compensation for that, but so that they can know that they have worth, that they have value. That's the greatest thing we can give people. And the dignity of free market capitalism is what has been perhaps the greatest blessing. I mean, they're obviously lifting people out of poverty and, you know, providing transportation for people, letting them go to places they've never been before, giving them things like air conditioning and heat inside, electricity inside, things like that. That's all wonderful. But the dignity that comes from work is perhaps the greatest gift of free market capitalism, and it is the greatest evil of entitlement schemes to strip people of that dignity. in the interest of helping them, when what you're really doing is making yourself feel better without allowing them to rise up and to have some of the dignity that you enjoy. So please read Popular Economics and by John Tamney, and make sure that you, if you get a chance, if you buy it in hardcover, make sure after you're done with it that you share it with somebody else. I actually got it in Kindle. Here, that's another miraculous thing. So I'm a big book shopper. You know, what if you had tried, some government person had tried to, like, control the book industry? Years ago, you could go to little bookshops on the street corner, and then people were all alarmed because these big box bookstores came along, like Borders and Barnes & Noble. They would say, oh my goodness, they're putting the small guy out of business. Well, then what happened? Borders went bankrupt, and Barnes & Noble, while a terrific store, has had to fill up a lot of its shelves with things that aren't books at all, to try to, you know, bring people in for other reasons, because Amazon.com came along and Barnes & Noble was smart to get in on that too, you know. But now a reader like me can have a book in seconds for a fraction of the price that I previously paid when I had to drive to the mall and then drive that serpentine pattern around the mall parking lot as I desperately try to find a parking spot that's within 100 yards of the main entrance so that I can go into Barnes & Noble and pay two or three times as much for a book as I would if I just got it online. Now, I buy books, and I buy them at Barnes & Noble as well, and I buy them at Amazon. But the incredible change in the book industry was unfathomable. And I've gotten to enjoy the other end of that. I've published books, which is something that was just unthinkable years ago. I mean, you had to have incredible resources to be able to publish a book. I've done it with virtually no resources. The first book I published, I literally did it almost no money down, because I actually took orders for the book before I printed it. And so it made it possible for me to fund the first print run. So there are still great little bookstores around the country. Barnes & Noble is still out there. Amazon just turned a profit in the third quarter, which a lot of people were shocked at. But things change rapidly, and government can't anticipate all the changes. They're wasting their money trying to break up monopolies. They're wasting their money trying to regulate things into or out of existence, you know, forcing us to refrain from or to participate in some sort of product. It is a complete waste of time. And yes, Jessica is noting that ebooks are still as expensive or even more so than some physical book. That's true. And that always irks me, because I know what it costs to produce an ebook. So when I see somebody, and a lot of times it's the books that I'm looking for are like pretty intense, like history books or economics books or something. I'm like, what do you mean $45 for an ebook? I'm not going to pay that. But most of the ebooks I buy are in the neighborhood of $9 to $15. And I can carry them around, you know, in my little Nook device. And so I don't have to have these gigantic, you know, bookshelves here behind me that have all this stuff on it. Every time we move, I have to, you know, break my back and carry those things around. So that's my paying, my tribute, my eulogy to free market capitalism. Eulogy would be, I hope, the wrong word for that. But free market capitalism should be boldly championed and proclaimed by not just Republicans. You would hope Democrats. Democrats know this. Most Democrats know this. But we should be champions of this. Scott Ott Podcast, Episode 6, featured audio excerpts from Scott Ott Show, originally streamed live on YouTube, October 22nd, 2015. For more information, go to scottott.tv. That's scottott.tv. Thanks for listening.